The following is an unrehearsed interview with Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. Participating in today's public affairs program are Jamie Whitney of the Pocahontas Record Democrat and Buena Vista County Journal, and A.J. Taylor of KIOW and KHAM Radio. The first question will be from Jamie.
Good afternoon, Senator Grassley. On Tuesday, you made a statement on the floor of the Senate about the public perception of the Supreme Court. In that statement, what I took away was you were concerned about politics in the high court, but only among center-left jurists. In that statement, you cite feelings of nameless constituents. Leaving feelings aside, how do you factually make the case that dissenting justices, who you describe as liberal, are making their legal arguments not from a constitutional perspective, but from a political one?
Thank you both for participating. Well, I'll use a Republican-appointed justice by the name of Roberts. There was a 6-3 vote that Obamacare violated the Interstate Commerce Clause, but he wanted to find a way to make it constitutional. He went to the taxing powers of the Congress to say, well, Congress could do this under the taxing powers. Well, Congress wasn't trying to do it under the taxing powers of the Congress, and that's almost the number one of the 18 powers of Congress. When I say we, the Democrats that wrote the bill, they were trying to do it under the Commerce Clause. And 6-3, they agreed that it violated the Commerce Clause. But they wanted to find some way of making sure it could go into effect, not declare it unconstitutional. So then they went to the taxing powers. And there was plenty of evidence during the debate on the bill in 2009 that Democrats were afraid to use the taxing power, because if they did, there was so much opposition to raising taxes that they thought it might go down. So I think I better get back to a more general answer to your question, though. The point of my speech was that hot-button issues should be no different than non-hot-button issues. The law is the law. And I referred to hot-button issues, the ones that are kind of decided on a 5-4 vote. Go ahead there, A.J.
Let's talk about the Farm Bill for a moment.
Yeah.
And the Farm Payment Loophole Elimination Act. What spurred this, and what is going to be the result of your actions here?
Let me give you a little background before I answer your question. You know, for several farm bills, I've been trying to get what you call hard caps. So we would target the farm bill subsidy payments to medium and small-sized farmers and not go to large farmers who have resources of their own to get them over things that they can't control, like, let's say, natural disasters or something like that. And when you go to I've been trying to do that for a long time. Well, here's what the situation was in 2014. I got exactly what I wanted through the Senate, exactly what I wanted through the House as part of the 2014 Farm Bill. You know what happened? Under those circumstances, it shouldn't have been touched by conferees between the House and Senate, ironing out the differences between the two houses. But the conferees, three from the South, where they don't like payment limits, and one other person, practically decimated the whole approach that I had. They left a little power for the Secretary of Agriculture to do something along this line. Well, Secretary Vilsack wanted to do as much as I was trying to do, but what was left of my original language gave him an opportunity to affect maybe 1% of the biggest farmers, not everybody. And so what this bill that I put in goes back to my original intent and gives the Secretary of Agriculture, Vilsack, the opportunity to do what almost what I was trying to do in the bill that I got through the House and Senate. Let's go back to Jamie then.
Okay, Senator, following up on AJ's question, how would that Loophole Elimination Act help young farmers and small farmers? And
well,
that it was it was left in the Farm Bill.
Yeah.
Do you think it'll get much support from your fellow lawmakers?
Well, answer the last question first. It's very difficult to open up a farm bill once you get it passed. And, you know, they tried to take $3 billion out of crop insurance last year, and we were able to stop that under the argument you don't open up a farm bill for the 5 years that it's into effect. So I think that my opportunity is going to come more on budget issues where they're trying to save money, because this will save hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, let's get back to the first point. It basically makes sure that family farmers, people with the old saying, dirt under their fingers, will benefit from this standpoint, and young farmers particularly, because what's wrong with the situation now when you don't have these payment limits? The biggest farmers are subsidized to get bigger. It drives up the price of land, drives up the price of cash rent, and quite frankly, that hurts small farmers. And so it's to correct that situation by targeting the bill or the payments to medium and small-sized farmers by putting a hard cap on so one farmer can't get only so much money. Let's go back to AJ.
You played a large role in drafting the Pension Protection Act of 2006, and now there seems to be some problems going on with regards to how that's being administered. What are your thoughts on this, and what needs to be done?
Well, let me ask you this. The only thing I've heard about that is from this standpoint. Are you talking about the Central States Teamsters problem?
Yes.
Oh, well, that that goes back. You can... The bill that you're talking about that I got passed does affect it to protect all pensions. But Central States is in such bad condition that there was special legislation passed as part of the budget bill in 2014, and I voted against that budget bill that had that provision in it. And so they set up a special thing for Central States Teamsters. That allowed the Secretary of Treasury to cut back under certain circumstances. There can be a vote of the members, yes, but the Secretary of Agriculture can negate that vote if it would say that nothing needs to be done to save money. So it's possible that Central States can be cut by a very high percentage in maybe this summer. So then I've, by the way, I've had these people show up at my town meetings. So what I'm explaining to them, I'm explaining to you, I've explained to them. There is a bill in the Labor Committee, and I'm not on that committee, that would overturn that 2014 decision. So these cuts wouldn't happen. I don't think that bill's going to pass, and I'm not going to take a position on it until it gets out so I know exactly what I'm taking a position on, because it could be changed in committee. So then you go back to something I am involved in, trying to help the Central State Teamsters, and that is that UPS made a special settlement with Central States and put billions of dollars into the fund. And now there's a real feeling among Central State Teamsters that that money is being... has been misused. And so I have, about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, wrote to the Government Accountability Office to get an accounting on whether something bad was done with that money. And that's my role right now. I'm going to stop now and say thank you, AJ and Jamie, for participating in today's public affairs program. This has been Senator Chuck Grassley reporting to the people of Iowa.